For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe, and another howdy, this time to the folks in Calgary, Alberta, who've made it number 7 on our list of all-time views by city, and where I briefly taught history at the University of Calgary, until the department chair sitting beneath a huge red silk icon of Che Guevara told me that I was too ideological for that field. Not that I'm bitter, you understand. Unlike all the people getting the vapors over Donald Trump first getting re-elected and then proceeding to do things he repeatedly promised. For instance, Climate Home News faints, quote, "The writing appears to be on the wall for climate projects funded by USAID, America's development agency, after the Trump administration turned off the money tap and is set to sack the vast majority of its staff." "I think this is the end of U.S. climate funding," Karen Mathieson of the Center for Global Development told Climate Home, describing as shocking the speed and brazenness with which Washington has attempted to dismantle its foreign aid arm, end quote. And while it certainly is brazen for a sovereign nation to presume to change one of its own policies, especially as advertised, we're inclined to sneer in return that, since you said this stuff was cheaper anyway, why do you need Yankee imperialist funding to go green and show the orange clods what real economics looks like? Then, playing deep state enabler, NBC emailed, quote, "A crusade to paint USAID as a malevolent force had developed in relatively fringe internet circles, only to be suddenly elevated and acted upon by Elon Musk. The agency has long been a target of criticism that its aid programs masked nation meddling and overspent American tax dollars abroad. Some conspiracy theories alleged that the programs were a cover for biowarfare research or that its funding enriched an elite few who control the world," end quote. So, boo Elon Musk. Yay overspending American tax dollars abroad. But USAID was the main funder of EcoHealth Alliance, which in turn funded the Wuhan Institute of Virology that, despite Washington blob denials, really seems very likely to have created COVID, possibly as part of a communist Chinese biowarfare research project. That USAID nevertheless, quote, "generally enjoyed bipartisan support in Washington," end quote, is precisely the kind of thing that made so many Americans think the place was a swamp. And look, I grant you, any large organization, especially if it's a government agency, is liable to get up to a few odd things. But when the White House press secretary can rattle off USAID paying for, quote, $1.5 million to advance DEI in Serbia's workplaces, $70,000 for a production of a DEI musical in Ireland, $47,000 for a transgender opera in Colombia, $32,000 for a transgender comic book in Peru, end quote, and it has a long-standing habit of funding anti-Israel groups, including some with terror affiliations, it might be advisable to concede that these items, at least, were ill-considered, instead of calling Elon Musk a paranoid lunatic for objecting to them. Oh, not to mention USAID's fondness for regime change, which progressives used to call imperialism. Instead, Climate Home News laments the imminent demise of such world-critical programs as, quote, $22 million to help farming communities in Iraq deal with climate-related drought, and $18.5 million for climate resilience measures in Palestine, end quote. And the New York Times whimpered, quote, U.S. aid agencies' climate programs aimed to curb migration, now they're gone, end quote. And supposedly Trump is the fool here since, quote, aid projects were designed to help Central Americans withstand extreme weather at home. Their end could undercut Trump's goal of reducing migration, end quote. Or not, given the enormous flood of illegal migrants to the U.S. over the last 4 years and the last 40, while these mighty programs poured a river of money into a desert of results. Meanwhile, Grist whined, quote, how Trump's USAID shutdown threatens the world's climate goals, end quote. So you have to feel pretty bad for this famous world, unable to act effectively without cash from Trump. And indeed, it turns out it might just perish without billions in futile aid funding, quote, that advocates say provides a critical lifeline to more than 100 countries at only a small fraction of the overall federal budget, end quote. A critical lifeline. So look for them to perish. Possibly they're going to vanish as part of the general sinking beneath the waves phenomenon linked to climate change. Oh, and speaking of swamp things, the Office of Inspector General of USAID did say that it, quote, announced in April 2022 a new globally focused climate strategy, end quote, with hugely ambitious goals and funding, but alas, quote, USAID did not have quality data to support its efforts to implement a comprehensive climate strategy. Specifically, the data was not complete, accurate, accessible, or current due to the design of USAID's information system. While USAID reported $2.6 billion in funding for climate change mitigation from fiscal year 2011 to 2021, the agency lacked complete information to effectively identify and support decisions regarding its resource needs. We also found that USAID's performance management process did not produce useful information for assessing its mitigation results, end quote. So, definitely a swamp thing spewing cash leftward without accountability. And another thing, if the US government cannot even try to modify its foreign aid portfolio without destroying this famous green energy transition worldwide, then that thing wasn't worth funding anyway. Meanwhile, in the real world, instead of children not knowing what snow is, they might be asking with sweet innocence, "What's spring, Daddy?" as, quote, "Britain is gearing up for snow as temperatures plummet and yellow cold weather warnings remain firmly in place," end quote. But the UK isn't the only place grappling with, of all things, cold weather in February in the Northern Hemisphere. So is the United States, where meteorologist Eric Snithill recently posted, quote, "Thus far, this has been the coldest January across the lower 48 since 1988, 37 years ago. How about them frozen apples," end quote. Indeed, and how about the Weather Network saying, quote, "A brutal, long-duration cold snap struck Calgary, Alberta, just as we turned the page into February," end quote. So, can we speak of a long, brutal, hot snap, or would that be climate change? In the newsletter, we also note a Wall Street Journal warning that, quote, "Nikola, the much-hyped hydrogen truck maker that was briefly valued more than Ford Motor, is nearing a bankruptcy filing, according to people familiar with the matter," end quote. Much hyped indeed, as the herd of independent mines and dependent subsidies rushes from one project to extract sunbeams from cucumbers to another. And, from the Settled Science File, an alert reader sends us a story that, quote, "An unusual deluge of rain is hitting the Sahara, one of the driest regions on Earth. It's unclear exactly why the desert is experiencing so much rain, but it could be connected to an especially quiet Atlantic hurricane season, scientists say," end quote. So, they don't understand the climate system well enough even to explain what's happening now, let alone predict it in advance. Not that rain, nor that quiet hurricane season. But they do know exactly what it's going to do much later, at a time that we can't check. For instance, quote, "Siberian tundra faces extinction by 2500 without emission cuts," end quote. Yeah, unless it doesn't. And, we might add, around 1500 AD, a lot of people felt that crops faced extinction by 2000 without witch burnings. Still, with alarmism, you know how the story goes. Climate Cosmos, via MSN, actually dares to try and explain, quote, "how climate change is making weather forecasts less reliable," end quote. Wait, it even made weather forecasts unreliable? There really is nothing it cannot do. Ah, and from the Hidden in Plain Sight file, also from Climate Cosmos, we're offered, quote, "Ancient Egypt, Lessons from the Past on Climate Change. Explore the wisdom of ancient Egypt as we uncover their responses to climate change. What can we learn from their resilience," end quote. I know, it's that climate change has always happened for natural reasons. Unless you think that building the pyramids released so much CO2 that the weather deteriorated. For some reason, the MSN algorithm recently decided that we couldn't get enough of Climate Cosmos, which was initially true in a rather sardonic way, as they seemed useful mostly for illustrating the chronic fatuities of alarmism. But something seems to have changed, because we just got from them, quote, "Electric cars aren't green, the truth about EVs and emissions," end quote. Which is not news to CDN readers and viewers, but it is news even to us when alarmists start saying it out loud, and not just to rubbish it, but to worry about it. And speaking of things to worry about, the former leftist darling Elon Musk, who's now accused of Trump-loving Nazi salutes, is building a lithium refinery in Texas to try to break the communist Chinese stranglehold on vital minerals for this famous green energy transition, or lack thereof. And that sounds like something right and left could unite behind, until you learn that the thing is apparently going to need up to 8 million gallons of water a day in bone-dry Corpus Christi, quote, "an area so dry the local water company distributes shower timers at high school football games," end quote. So, once again, it really isn't easy being green. Now, in the midst of all this doom and gloom, we would like to predict some doom. But this is good doom because it's doom for global warmism. It may seem the most powerful force in the public policy galaxy, closing in on the last futile rebels with inexorable sinister power. Even politicians who dare question the zealot's policy recommendations seem, with one huge orange exception, to be terrified of challenging their premises. Yet Barton Swain in the Wall Street Journal recently declared it terminal, writing, quote, "Momentous social movements begin to die the moment adherents figure out their leaders don't believe what they say," end quote. And, we add, when non-adherents notice that their predictions of the end of days are better suited to cheap comedy than to expensive policy interventions. And another thing. The Canadian government puts out an endless barrage of press releases, starting with some variant of, quote, "Across the country, the impacts of climate change are becoming more severe and more frequent, with extreme events like floods, wildfires, and heat waves on the rise," end quote. What they never provide is any data showing that these things really are on the rise, or justifying their subsequent claims that they are affecting the safety of our community or our quality of life. But if they can't face the boring slog of, oh, say, checking their own abundant historical data, luckily for them, they can now find a handy compendium of the key evidence in an 88-page summary by Canadians for Sensible Climate Policy and the Heartland Institute. It's called Energy and Climate at a Glance, Canadian edition, and it's available from the International Climate Science Coalition. Our government won't like it, though, because the first half is devoted to the hogwash numbers behind their own climate plans, and then the second half summarizes the highlights of the science, from the paleo record to the trifling human contribution to total greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, to the failure of the models, distortions of the urban heat island effect, and then, as if it weren't enough of a downer for them already, quote, "Chapter 4, extreme weather and weather-related disasters are not getting worse," end quote. And having detailed that, it then catalogues the enormous benefits that fossil fuels bring to our lives, including particularly to poor people in poor countries, all of which would be forgone for no benefit if not for the saving grace that the government's plans are hopelessly impractical. But when that's the good news, you're in a heap of trouble. And the truly sad part here is that none of this data is really new. The booklet does a very nice job of pulling together things that are actually already out there for anyone who cared to look. But instead of spending some of the billions that it's dumped into the climate change file on elementary research, the Canadian government tries to bore us into submission by repeating false claims ad nauseam. How can they stand to hear themselves talk? Now, speaking of data rather than empty words, our latest Look It Up item on Arctic sea ice volume reminds everyone that we're in an ice age. That's a geological epoch with persistent year-round ice at the poles. And on that definition, we've been in one for 2.58 million years. Though if your definition requires ice at just one pole, then 34 million years. What's often colloquially called an ice age, where you've got ice covering large parts of the continents, is properly termed a glaciation. And a relatively balmy and livable interval like the Holocene that we're currently enjoying is called an interglacial. And long may the Holocene last, because the previous four interglacials were actually shorter than this one, but also warmer. But wait a minute, you say, hasn't all the Arctic ice melted? No. It builds up until April each year, then it partially melts back every summer to a minimum around September, and then it reforms in winter. Which is not surprising, since winter temperatures in the Arctic are usually in the range of minus 20 Celsius to minus 40 Celsius. And while the summer melt has led to lower ice coverage than there used to be, the minimum hasn't changed much since 2012. How do we know that? Because we looked it up, in this case at the Danish Meteorological Institute website. And, for more fun, here's a visualization of the September sea ice minimum since 1979 from NASA's National Snow and Ice Data Center. You can see that, even at its lowest, there's still lots of ice. And you can also see that there clearly was a drop in the ice volume from around 2004 to 2012, which led a lot of people to extrapolate in a panic and declare that the North Pole would be ice-free by 2016 or 18 or 20. Instead, it leveled out. And we at CDN fearlessly predict that by the end of the winter, that's in April, Arctic sea ice will be back well over 20,000 cubic kilometers. But we don't just predict it. When the time comes, we'll look it up. And another thing. The underwater eruption of the Hunga Tonga Hunga Hapai volcano in 2020 injected an enormous amount of water vapor into the atmosphere. And water vapor is, of course, drumroll please, the most important greenhouse gas by far. So, that eruption might have been behind the temperature spike the following year. Certainly, as recently as last year, scientists were admitting that they couldn't explain that spike, but they were pretty sure it wasn't due to CO2. So, the big empirical question was whether the trend would level off but then resume rising, or whether it would drop back to pre-2022 conditions. And, while the New York Times may holler, "Global temperatures shattered records in January," here's what the satellite data show instead. Courtesy of Dr. Roy Spencer at the University of Alabama at Huntsville, the monthly global temperature anomaly for January 2025 was 0.46 Celsius, down almost half a degree compared to April 2024's 0.94. The southern hemisphere fell by 0.6 Celsius since its February 2024 peak, and the tropics cooled even more, a full 1.02 degrees Celsius since March 2024. And the models never saw it coming, and can't explain it now that it has come. And another thing. Since we're repeatedly being told that a warming of 1.5 degrees Celsius since 1850 would be worse than the worst catastrophe ever, except a warming of 2 degrees Celsius since then, and so we must rush to the poorhouse to prevent it, isn't it remarkable that the world's troposphere cooled by a third of that amount over the past year alone, and nobody noticed, or if they did notice, thought it worth mentioning, let alone celebrating? If these people have no humility, maybe they could at least have some humus. Because the CO2science.org archive says that chickpea, which is also known as garbanzo bean, or Kicker arietinum for those in the Conoscera, is a protein-rich staple that, 23 experiments between 2012 and 2020 showed, grows well with an extra 300 parts per million of CO2 in the air. So, put that in your humus and spread it. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I'm no swamp thing.
That's right.